So we'll start straight away with Patricia in Australia, and her question relates to how to stop anyone smoking. Patricia's question is, "Hi, Mark. This is Patricia from Gold Coast in Australia. I have a client who is coming in to stop smoking, and after chatting with her on the phone, she's ready now to stop, but her motivation is just financial. It has nothing to do with health. She's been smoking for 27 years, 30 a day. How would you approach this one, please? Thank you."
Okay, and thank you, and hello, Patricia. And this may have been about a client that you saw a while back, but this is a repeating pattern that we see. And you know, as I say, denial is not just a river in Africa. But we need to respect people's motivations. You know, even if if you do see any number of smokers, you will sometimes get the sense of optimistic distortion, as they call it. You know, we know that one in two smokers are killed by smoking, but it's if you're going to carry on with a behavior like that, one in two smokers who smoke 20 a day long term will be killed by their smoking. But it's, whether they're killed by it or whether it just ages them prematurely and all these other health detriments, it's difficult to smoke long term without any health detriment. And but we do need to work with their or within their belief system, you know, so it won't be as if this person hasn't heard in the media about all the health detriments of smoking, but she's choosing not to acknowledge them. Okay. So the best, you know, if we externalize the pattern of smoking, the best thief is the one you don't know or believe is actually thieving from you. Okay. That is the very best type of thief. Okay. Now, there's an idea I might introduce, you know, subtly to this client, perhaps during trance. Okay. Because if you conflict with her too much, you know, and talk about all the years smoking will thieve from her life, you know, all the years it's going to snatch from her life, all the time it threatens to take from, you know, from her being alive with loved ones, how it steals youthfulness, how it's already probably done that, how if scientists were commissioned to find a substance that aged the human body really, really fast and effectively, they couldn't do much better than to come up with nicotine. It's a very effective aging device. And, you know, if we talk too overtly about how skin and ovaries and eyes and neurons are compromised and corrupted and corroded by smoking, then you might just initiate the rubber band effect. You know, the more you pull one way, the more she springs back the other way. And natural resistance kicks in, you know. And we want resistance from our smoker, but we want them to start resisting what's really undermining them. You know, we want the rebellion there, but, you know, the rebellion needs to be aimed at the interlopers, the tyranny that the person is living under, not someone who's trying to release them from the tyranny. So you know, we have to tread carefully with this sort of person. Now, if you watch my session with Linda inside the Stop Smoking course, at no point do I tell her smoking is bad for her. You know, I don't need to, because most of the time I talk in parallel to her about toxic relationships, and she can make the analogous leap and link herself. And I do this because she knows I'm talking about smoking, but I'm doing so in such a way that she can really grab hold of anything and say, say yes, that she understands what I'm talking about, but on an unconscious level. So I'm not giving her anything to say no to in my ideas. You know, there's nothing that she can say no to directly. You don't want your client saying no to you. You want them saying no to the cigarette. You know, you're rescuing someone potentially on death row who believes they want to leave the prison because they don't know the color of the walls, you know, or they don't like the color of the walls. Okay, so she thinks she wants to leave the prison, the trap, because of some incidental, fact, which, for her is the cost of the cigarettes. But that really is, time is late and she might, her life might be in danger. And she's talking about the color of the walls of the prison, so to speak. Okay, so talk about how disgusting those walls are to the death row inmate, you know, and that's why they want to leave death row, you know. So really talk about how smoking steals her money. Okay, that's what it's doing. Okay, that's the least of what it's stealing, but it is stealing her money. You know, she's paying for it to be nesting inside her and stealing her resources. Okay. You can talk to her about, not her, of course, but how 100 million people had to be prepared to sacrifice themselves for the good of the tobacco industry, okay, in the 20th century, okay, whose executives probably wouldn't dream of smoking themselves or wouldn't want their own families smoking, but they're, you know, lining their pockets from the fact that 100 million people, according to the World Health Organization, in the 20th century were prepared to lay down their lives for the cause of tobacco industry profits. How a billion people, 100 million people is nothing, how a billion people are obligingly willing to throw their lives away so the industry profits in the 21st century will be absolutely astronomical. Okay, that's how many people are predicted to be killed by smoking in the 21st century. A billion people. Okay, now how that might be fine in one way, financially, that's great. Okay, if we're talking finances, that's fantastic for the tobacco industry. Not her, of course, because she's superhuman and won't be affected by these health issues. But a billion people will be and be brought down and killed. Okay, and on one level, they're all prepared to die to profit the industry. Okay, now that sounds harsh and stark, but it's a reframe. It's a way of thinking about it. If she wants to just talk about money, then this is me talking about money to her as connected to the smoking industry. Okay, so, you know, and of course, the tobacco industry needs new recruits as well that are prepared to die for the cause on one level. Okay, so I'm talking about the money aspect, but I've widened the context to imply health as well. Okay, it's not direct, so she can't really argue. I'm not even talking about her health or how it could very well kill her. I'm just talking about the billion people that the World Health Organization has predicted that it will kill. Okay, so not you, of course, but other people, and then she can make the link herself. Okay, you know, and you can use the my friend John or Joan technique, so beloved of hypnotherapists, you know, and therapists of all that. You can talk about how you spoke to some other smoker, okay, my friend Joan or John, then say what you said to that other smoker as an indirect way of saying it to her, you know. So I might say, you know, I was talking to someone who really needed to escape the smoking trap, you know, and she felt like it was starting to squeeze her. Not just like with you, not just financially, but because she'd been smoking a long time, you know, and it was squeezing her physically as well as financially. Not like you, but the smoking had done a real number on her. It convinced her that even whilst it was stealing her money from her, that's all it was stealing. Okay. Now, some people are really taken in by its lies, you know. And I said to her, you know what? Smoking can seem like a friend. Okay. You know, it's there for you in the rain, you know, in the bad times and the good times, and it's reliable. But if you have a person, friend, that you saw in hidden camera footage was stealing from your purse, you know, demanding payment just for being a friend, and then you discovered had a very real likelihood of one day turning around with a smile and stabbing you in the back, I wonder how much longer you'd want to be around that lying, convincing, conniving, charming, but parasitical so-called friend. So this is really about friendship, you know. And this is where we start to, you know, discuss or describe smoking in terms of relationships, okay? Now, so the my friend John technique, I mean, it sounds very obvious the way I've done it there, so we can slip it in, you know. But the my friend John technique is so powerful because it enables us to say things to people without actually saying it to them. Okay, and for people who are too frightened by the truth or too concerned with saving face or personality status, it can literally be a lifesaver. And she needs rescuing. You know, you have the key, but you'll need her help in helping you help her to safety. Okay, you know, we can unlock the prison door, but if the person is so indoctrinated that they won't leave the prison, then we need to find ways of helping them out whilst the door is still open, whilst the opportunity for health is still there, you know, and continued existence. So you can talk about the physical threats without seeming to talk about them, but the message gets across regardless, and more powerfully because you deliver it to her unconscious mind during hypnosis or some of those ideas. Okay, so I hope that's some kind of an answer for that, but it is a common pattern, and some people will tell you, whilst they're coughing and wheezing and looking much older than they really are, that it's had no detrimental effect on their health, and it's purely for financial reasons. And we do need to kind of respect that as well. So not to tread too carefully, rather I should say not tread too bombastically over their belief system.